I mean, we are constantly rendering. It is our strongest tool and by far our biggest competitive advantage.
This is The Art of Construction with your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keefe. Devin has built a multi-seven-figure business in the construction industry, selling windows, doors, and hardware over the past 13 years. Devin's passion for helping those around him led him to create the Art of Construction informational platform, a part of which is a fireside chat podcast with industry professionals all focused on how they apply art in their business and construction projects. Grown to an audience of over 100,000, Devin shares his strategies for what he has accomplished and creates insightful conversations with industry leaders. This is The Art of Construction, featuring your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keefe.
Oh, Kevin, here we go. I love the conversations where we get to go in and talk with one of our valued customers, Crystal Russell of TVL Creative, that has been working her tail off as an informational entrepreneur under building this business as a Denver native, went out to school, architectural school. Hey, I'm going to challenge her some of that information.
Yeah, I think we're going to be her toughest customer here.
So we're going to bring out crusty contractor and crusty homeowner and have a lot of fun in a fireside chat with Crystal. So, Kevin, here we go. So what's your favorite beverage?
Coffee, hands down.
Coffee. Here we go.
All day.
All right.
All day in.
We just came in before we started the show, and our I think there's a lot of people on here that love coffee because our Keurig, the new one is now acting up. It's like that thing just runs nonstop around here.
I got the last good cup.
Cool.
Never fun.
Well, tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Oh, my gosh. I've never been out of the country. Not once. So for me, I think a favorite is Philadelphia. Lived there for 10 years, and I love going back to visit. I think architecturally, it's one of the most fascinating cities.
There's a lot of history there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Got a soft spot for it. It's hard to live there.
And you went to school back there?
I did.
Where'd you go to school?
Philadelphia University.
Oh, interesting.
Which was now merged with Thomas Jefferson, so I don't know if I can even say Philadelphia University anymore. I went to Thomas Jefferson University, apparently.
There you go.
Yeah,
things are always changing.
Yeah, I went to school there for my first degree and lived there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to live there, but I love visiting. It's probably my favorite place, yeah. But I'm actually leaving for Europe in August for the first time.
Where are you going?
There you go.
I am starting in Munich, and then Rome, Barcelona.
Mm. We got to go to the Hofbrauhaus. That's a requirement. If you're American, you got to go, you know?
Duh. I'm there. I'm basically there already.
Yeah. Excellent.
I think that's my only plan. I don't think we have another plan.
That's a good one to start, yeah.
I think you guys are on the same page.
I think so, too. Fast friends.
Well, tell us your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction arena.
Design is my biggest hobby and interest. I know people hate my answer to this question. In a networking group, I was asked that last week. Like, what do you do outside of design and construction? I don't. I really don't. I know that sounds crazy, but I work a nice, solid 14, 15-hour day every day, 7 days a week. And if I manage to get caught up, which never happens, I find another thing to design. So really, it takes up all my time. I used to be a really big golfer, and
really?
I play the drums. So those are two hobbies I have, but I rarely get to tap into
those.
How
did you ever fit golf in? Because that's one of the frustrations for me is golf is
like an eight-hour day.
Golf is an eight-hour day, right? So, I mean...
I only ever fit golf in before I started a company. I have not played golf since I founded my business. And they're supposed to go hand in hand, right? Business and golf. But you're right. It's like an eight-hour day.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to justify that?
Well, you can definitely tell the passion that you love your business. Your business is your passion. And as an entrepreneur, you kind of have to live that, right? Especially in the beginning. But that's what we talk about, how you can develop systems and structure to have a lot of fun, but maybe spend a little bit more time on all the different passions, right?
Absolutely. I have a goal for work-life balance this year. I mean, that's something I'm working towards, so I'll get back to you on hobbies.
Well, we got to know a little bit about Crystal Russell, who is the founder of TVL Creative, a Denver native with a lengthy design background and boundless passion for everything creative. Having worked in the design field for 10 years, Crystal brings her varied skills to the table to manage TVL Creative as a multidisciplined company. Tapping into her experience with interior design, graphic design, media design, and fine art, Crystal aims to create design solutions that are proactive and unique. After being disenchanted with the overly formal and relatively unwelcoming air of the other design providers, Crystal established TVL Creative as a company rooted in openness, genuine friendliness, and raw design enthusiasm. So there's the bio. Tell us a little bit more, and let's peel back the layers and have some fun.
Awesome. I don't really know where to start with this. I think, you know, all of that is very true. I think part of my challenge being in both the interior design and architectural realms in school was kind of getting out there and interning in the industry when I was young and feeling like there was this kind of elite lack of approachability, I'll call it. And I don't want to offend anyone, but it's true. I think there's a universal understanding that there's a sort of level of, you know, expectation for the client having to be at a certain range of financial or status to access good design, right? And my first degree is a Bachelor of Science in Interior Design, and I emphasize that because it's really psychologically based. I focus on health and wellness and psychology. And so for me, design is not making things pretty. It's making things functional and, you know, bettering life in a lot of ways, health and life and function. So, you know, I love making things beautiful, but that's not really at the core of what we did. So I was driven to start a company based on that a lot, you know, thinking that I just wasn't loving the way people were approaching design in the industry at all. And then further, you know, to take that a step beyond not just the way people are approaching design or coming at clients with their attitude towards design, but their ability to execute design start to finish, right? Like, you know, not just having an idea, but being able to document it and then see it through all the way to build out. So I had these ideas, and I was working for a contractor in Philly after I graduated my first degree, which was the interior design degree in Philly. I was working for a contractor, not a designer, not an architect, the actual builder. So I started learning the ins and outs of construction before anything else. That was my first real experience, was seeing installations happen, getting on site and being like, whoa, we did not learn this in school. What is a rough and valve? What are you talking about? Seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
So seeing all those things firsthand, I started on the construction end, seeing things firsthand, having all this wealth of, you know, formal design technical knowledge. I knew how to do drawings and I knew fire ratings, stuff like that, but I didn't know how installations actually worked firsthand. So that's where I started, and then feeling comfortable on that end of it, it felt kind of like opportunities were limitless, right? So
awesome. Well, these are my favorite fireside chats when you can bring, you know, all of that theory and history, but talk relevance and reality. And you got to give credit where credit's due. One of our trusted advisors, Adam Sinclair, set this all up. And it's so cool to leave Mountain View and Endora, our day-to-day business, get to know you that much more in a different environment. And you have to work on your business as well as in your business. So we're working on your business, Crystal Russell, talking theories, principles. Then we're going to leave here and do a lunch and learn and take a deep dive into the real business. And that's what the Art of Construction is all about, is talking all of that stuff to pull it all together. And as we've getting to know you outside of the Art of Construction, I want you to talk about how your business, I think a lot of us would owners and people in the market would love to hear that, correct me if I'm wrong, it's all females and everybody is under 35 years of age. Correct. You do residential and commercial, and you have both an architectural and a design background. Correct. So you would kind of be, I would classify you like marketing people classify Devin Tilly, the informational entrepreneur, as a construction unicorn. So, and what that means in the marketing world is that you know how to speak all of the language, yes, but you've also lived the language. Yes. So that's what's so cool and I want to talk about today. So tell us, you know, about that all-female business.
Yes. I will. I would be remiss if I left out Timothy, our marketing man. He is male. I'm not going to let that slide. Well, that's Tim, I didn't forget about you. But in terms of design.
But that's, I have to stop you there because that's the total opposite of what you hear. It's like a lot of, it's in the construction industry. Yep. It's all these men, yep, are the sales guys and running the presidents and doing all this stuff. And then there's the sweet design marketing gal.
It's true.
And you're the total opposite of that. That's great.
Yeah, so. Total opposite. Our only man is our marketing guy, and he's our people person. We, you know, us ladies, we get a little hardcore, hard-edged, you know. We got to have the soft, yeah, guy to come in and, you know,
it's
break
so
it up.
It's so funny to hear that. No, bring in the softy,
right,
guy.
The
Greg Hernandez, who's our strategist for the Art of Construction, is just going to be he's going to be laughing hearing this because, yep, he's always talking about how us, our manly guys,
that's
have
right,
to get into our creative and,
yes,
you know, our soft
sides,
emotional side.
Absolutely.
So
I know, and we're the opposite. You know, I am So you're correct. Yes, we're all under 35. I just turned 30 this year, actually. And then my two lead designers, Ferris and Ashley, are both right there with me. Ashley's the oldest only by a year. So we are, I emphasize that because I think it's important for one, just going to the age thing, I deal with ageism a lot in this industry and being a business owner and not only being young, but looking very young and being a female and running the show and coming in and saying, hey, we're going to build this and we're going to manage this. And there is hesitation all the time clients and partners in the building industry, like until they get to know me. And that's hard, right? So I make this emphasis because we come from the awkward generation that's like almost, I think I'm technically a millennial, I'm not sure. But I'm emphasizing this, right? Because the people that I partner with and the people who make up my company are the most driven entrepreneurial folks I've ever met in my entire life. And I think there's a big stereotype around the millennial thing. And I've definitely experienced it in working with students. I'm also a teacher, so I see that a lot. Yeah, we're all female, and I love it. I've always enjoyed being different, and I've always been a little bit of like a rebellious child growing up. So I think for me, it inherently just, it worked to be challenged by the construction industry and that we are unicorns in a lot of ways. You know, I kind of dress up every day, but I'm on job. I was walking in here like dusting my pants off because I was just crawling around on a bathroom subfloor, like getting under looking at a pipe. So this is kind of, it's an interesting dichotomy, I think. But I've had to learn to be really assertive and really accurate and really certain, perhaps more so than if we were, I'm not trying to pull that card, but perhaps more so than if we were men in the industry, right? Yeah. So we have to come in and be really strong salespeople. You're talking about salespeople usually being men, and we kill it in sales, I think.
Well, tell us a little bit about how your background with having worked at a general contracting company, design background. Tell us how you kind of took that experience and then rolled it into the platform of your company, and then kind of outline for our listeners kind of how your platform is different than typical.
It's a great question. So I started the company technically when I was 26. So I was working for this contractor much earlier than that, 23 to 26. I think for me, the thing that sparked me deciding to start a company more than anything, two big factors. The first was working for this guy. He had a phenomenal, what I considered phenomenal concept about contracts, right? He was really good at writing his contracts. He's from Romania and learned English in 5 years, started a company, super hustle, like American dream. Like the guy knew how to hustle. I watched him do that and was super inspired by it. But he's really good at writing contracts. He was really good at finding solid subs and marketing. He was good at marketing. He was terrible to his clients. He was bad to his people. And I think that watching that, I saw these key points of where he was really succeeding. I could see why he was growing, but then I was catching on to where he was really failing. And it was just lighting a fire under my ass. I don't know if I can say that, but I'm going to say it anyway. And I said, hey, if he were really good to his people, and he can, you know, because there's a balance of genuine kindness and being friendly that happens in business that helps you grow. And he wasn't doing that. And I said, if I took his model of this, and I applied being good to people and combined those, I'm sure I'd have a really good business model.
I think that's particularly critical in construction because I think whether it's male or female, I think the overlying tendency is to tear people's head off immediately.
Yep.
There's a time and a place for that. Trust me. I mean,
definitely.
It happens and sometimes you need to. But I think that should be like the last bullet in the gun versus working with and trying to be kind to people to get out of them what your vision is. And I think coming at it with passion is a heck of a lot more productive.
Always. I completely agree. Okay.
All right. I got an idea here. I'm going to put you both on the spot watching you two as living this day in, day out. As you say, females crushing it in sales.
Yeah.
Well, that's the key to everything we're doing. And it's not about being salesy. It's about being nice and having fun.
Absolutely.
So this is what we're going to do. We've been doing some role playing in our day to day with my trusted advisors at Mountain View, and we call them the Crusty Contractor. So old Crusty Contractor is going to be Kevin, and you're going to be the trusted advisor, as we call them here in the Art of Construction. So Kevin, I want you to hit her with some old school Crusty Contractor language, and I want you to answer that stuff, how you would answer that.
Uh-oh.
Since you live commercial, residential, architectural, and design.
Yep.
Kevin, as the managing advisor for Mountain View and Noondor, so guys like Adam can hear how to best work with our ideal customers, I want to hear you guys have a conversation. Let's play make-believe for fun.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. And then the biggest challenge is trying to clean it up. So I'm trying to do this in a G-rated format because that's the other thing. There's
well,
a
you
whole
can just beep,
vocabulary.
Beep. Just go, you know, no. I'm crusty beep.
Time it appropriately.
Well, Crystal, why in the beep would I want to hire you? I've got to get this project done. I've got to get it done on time. I've got to be on budget. I've got to make my clients happy. And so why in the world would I want to come to TVL Creative and have you do this for me?
This is hard because I think you're misunderstanding the hierarchy here. I hire you. I would like to hire you to help my clients, and I think that you could potentially do a lot of really great work. We've got this all laid out for you. We have the whole design completed. The client is ready to go. I've given them my highest recommendation of you. We'd love to have you on the job site. I'd be disappointed if you didn't join us.
Well,
can I speak to this for a minute?
Yes.
So I know that sounded kind of snarky, but truly, I think this brings up a really interesting point with the way that we operate. And you asked how it's different. You're grinning because that was such a bitchy answer. you're like, wow, she's such a little shit. But truly, the way that we operate and the way I've always, and I think why our system works, is we are the first contact with the client. If the client comes to somebody and says, hey, we need our whole house gutted and redone, they come to us and say, can you handle this? We say, absolutely. We are the first point of contact. We come in, we do the full estimate, we take all their measurements, photos, we develop a design proposal for them for free, which includes a lot of really amazing stuff for free up front to help them kind of visualize and plan. Then we coordinate them with a builder. We say, okay, we'll bring somebody in. So we contact our resources in the industry that we partner with, whether they're new or they're longtime builders for us. We go to them, we say, hey, we've got a job, it's great, this is the budget, this is what they're looking to do, here's what we're proposing, can you come take a look? They come on site, we have drawings for them, we have renderings, we have their budget, we have kind of an estimated idea of where money's going to be allocated based on what the client's already told us, because we've done all that really heavy-hitting psychological development in the beginning with them, we've made this bond. And 9 times out of 10, what we find is if we come in and we make a recommendation to a client, if we say, we want this person to build this out, they will do it. So our partnerships with our builders are important because they know that if we love them and we trust them and we have a great working relationship, we will recommend them every time. And we'll say, hey, you need to get this person here to build this. They will do a phenomenal job for you. So when the builder comes in, does their estimate and sends it to the client and everything, it's more of a partnership. It's not really, we never get hired by the contractor, to be completely honest with you. That's never how it's worked.
And gotcha. And what you pointed out is so key. Go back to listen to show 75 titled, What Are the Keys to a Successful Home Building Project?, where Tim Coffrin talks exactly about that. And we had a whole conversation about if you're a contractor looking to grow your business,
yes,
go meet the TVL Creative in wherever you are in this world, because they are the ones that are going to be advocating for you. But you got to build that trust and that relationship.
Absolutely.
And then you're going to have that short list of those contractors that you build that relationship and you keep getting better and better, and the cog of that wheel just keeps growing.
Absolutely.
And going faster, right?
Right. And there's always that conversation of the TVL client, you know, we build so much trust and relationship with them that if we say, truly, we think that this person is going to be the best fit for your job and we like working with them, they believe it. And so it's not just that we have all this power, but it's, you know, our recommendation, we make it, we don't make one lightly, and people trust when we do. So it's a nice relationship. And then conversely, you know, if a contractor meets a client and they need a designer, they come to us and say, hey, are you willing to partner on this? And I love it that way. I don't think of it as that they're hiring us, we're hiring them, we partner.
Okay,
so
right,
Crystal,
in the right place.
Crystal, that all sounds great. Okay, but now my question
here
is,
goes crusty.
Here
goes Crusty again.
Okay,
bleep
back.
Bleep contractor. So okay, that all sounds great, but you're kind of young, like you might even be on the millennial side. So
yes.
How are you going to interact with all my guys? I mean, I got a lot of fossils on the job site all the time. I mean, how are we going to work through that?
You know, I think you're just going to have to trust that I'm capable of having a dialogue with them on a regular basis. I think another thing you might be comfortable in knowing is that our clients hire us for project management. So while there's project management on the construction level, there's also the design project management end, where we are on site every other day at minimum, coming on, talking to the guys, making sure our drawings are being followed, making sure people are understanding. And I think maybe even with just one conversation with me, they'll feel better. But if they'd like to meet me beforehand and walk through the design, if that makes them more comfortable, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, now there's one other thing that's kind of confusing, and that is on the job site, a lot of times I've had designers and architects come out, and they don't understand how the building process works. Mm-hmm. I don't need somebody in there causing trouble, making hay, and then I can't understand what the heck they're talking about, or they come in and they want to move this and they want to move that, and it's usually after we've built everything. So
absolutely.
Tell me how you're going to work through that.
So we actually don't allow construction to start. We don't allow our clients to sign off on construction starting until they have signed off on our drawings, agreeing that there are no changes unless we uncover something that is a problem and needs to be adjusted. They also have agreed that they will allow us to have all materials on site before construction begins. So a contractor does not swing a hammer until all of the materials are on site and the drawings have been agreed upon. It is actually a breach of contract for the client to go outside of the agreed upon design scope. So changes won't be happening unless they're absolutely necessary.
Where do you put all the stuff?
We got to find a place for it. Most of the time clients can store it, like in a garage or wherever. And usually we can coordinate the timing so well that it's within just a couple days of starting or a week. Usually we have a start date, and then we push them to make sure everything is there. And I'm not talking like general construction materials. You know, the contractor is responsible for that. But in terms of finished materials that need, or valves, things that need critical install early in the game, those are all on site and ready to go so that they're not there saying, like, where's this, you know? Otherwise, we'll store it at our studio for them.
Yeah, and you're kind of talking in generalities. The critical path is you always got to be having the stuff when you need it, or everything stops in its tracks.
It does. It halts, you know, and it affects every other trade. And when you're looking at a market like we have now in Denver, you don't have room for error and you don't have room for delay. You know, we're seeing months and months and months to get on anybody's schedule. One of our contractors is booked into March of 2018 with our jobs at this point. And that's what we're seeing with everybody. And so everybody's backed up, scheduled in, and one mistake like that will stall almost a year of booking. So we're really diligent about that. We push clients to be very aware of that. We have that conversation very early in the game. And then it's our responsibility to keep them on track. I think contractors really enjoy us for that reason. I'm not going to lie to you. It's just all there, you know?
Talk a little bit about how you use either 3D rendering or BIM or whatever you're doing to help clients visualize your... Because, you know, a lot of people, when I was a builder, one of the biggest challenges I felt we had was giving people the ability to visualize things. So we had like one of the architects we used, he could do hand drawings, and we did some amazing things to help people, but that was before some of the technology that's available today. So talk a little bit about how do you utilize that to help people visualize, because unfortunately most people can't.
Yeah, I am so glad you asked this, because that is our specialty, hands down. I hesitate to use the word expert, but I am an absolute expert at 3D modeling, photorealistic rendering. It's what I teach at the Art Institute, and I taught it for years at Philadelphia University as well. I actually started the program there for 3D Studio Max, which is what Pixar used to use for their animations. So when I was in school, they weren't teaching that, and so I'm self-taught in it, and we kind of hustled our way through learning it and then just became really, really, really good at it. And now we're to the point where my entire team is proficient, more than proficient in that program, and also very fast. So part of our proposal process, which is also very different and very risky, we understand. But when we meet with a client, we say, okay, you know, if we go into it and we feel like we can get it, you know, we just in conversations leading up to the estimate, we feel confident that they're serious and invested in their project, we'll do a free estimate for them. And part of that estimate includes a photorealistic rendering when we send the proposal. We send the contract and we send a rendering. And the thing about that, if I want to get into the whole psychology thing, is that people see basically a photograph of what their space could look like, whether it's exactly what they want or not. But they see that, and they cannot say no. I mean, they really cannot say no. And so that just opens the door to getting them. We're showing an investment up front, saying, hey, we're willing to spend the time to develop this model that you could easily take and have someone build off of.
Awesome.
Which doesn't happen.
Yeah, there's two things I want to peel back the layers on. That is that you have to have the ability to not waste your time or their time by creating. It's a lot of work to create those pictures. So I want you to talk about kind of your process on what is the program you use and when do you say, I'm going to sit and spend hours at a computer to put this picture together.
So we do, I'm not kidding you, when for every single proposal we do, which means every client lead that we get that we go meet, we do a proposal for, and we get probably 6 to 10 leads a week. So I just had 6 estimates last week. So I did 6 renderings last week for proposals. Now, after clients sign, they can sign for X amount of renderings to help visualize further. And so we do, I would say that I do on average 10 3D models a week. on average. But we're so fast at them now, it used to take me 2 weeks to develop a 3D model. We use 3D Studio Max from Autodesk. It's owned by Autodesk now. Really advanced kind of parametric NURBS modeling. I like it better than kind of the rigidity of things like Revit. I respect Revit, but it's more like clay modeling, so we can do a lot of really experimental stuff, and the lighting power is insane. But yeah, so we do them all the time. I mean, we are constantly rendering. It is our strongest tool and by far our biggest competitive advantage. We are, as far as I know, one of the only interior design firms using that program, and we offer it at a level that's much more affordable than you'd think because we're efficient, you know, so you can give them really high-end visualization. And we find that, you know, we can give contractors an entire drawing set and a rendering, and they're always using the rendering. It's bizarre because everything is so easy to understand when it's exactly to scale and we're using real image mapping of actual products and things. It's amazing how easy it is to understand the design. It has eliminated a ton of revisions and problems in construction having those visuals. Clients are willing to pay for them because they see it and they're like, oh, this was not what I was thinking this would look like. So we make changes early in the game, and by the time we get to construction, they're so sure what things will look like that usually we don't have any changes, you know, honestly. Yeah.
So on that subject, there's two things I'd like you to address. But before that, I want to kind of give a little bit of background. So we've had, I think, at least a half a dozen architects on the show that have talked about two things that are extremely important. That's the interview process with prospective clients, and making sure that if there isn't a fit, that you all collectively move on without wasting a lot of time. So I'd like you to touch on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the second part is the communication of the emotional aspect of what it's going to be like for that ultimate client to experience the finished project that you're proposing. So talk a little bit about how you go through those two things.
That's a great
question. And then I'll be the role play. I'll be the homeowner.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, no. Okay, so great questions. In terms of not wasting time and kind of accepting that maybe a project isn't a good fit, we try to do that before we even meet them on site.
Gotcha. So you're doing that before you're face-to-face.
We are. Okay. And I think it's pretty obvious if a project is right or not. Sometimes we'll get, you know, a random message through the website directly, or we'll call where somebody will say, hey, we want to replace our shower pan. We're like, okay, well, you know, sorry. That's
we
not.
We could do that,
we
but
we could,
it's
but
not,
you're going to waste money, right? Yeah. You're going to spend time you don't need to spend. You're not looking for design help, I don't think. You're looking for just installation. And we don't do any project if it doesn't involve design work. So that, you know, easy. A lot of times, though, if there's a project where maybe they send us a preliminary budget. This happens a lot. We'll get a really large scope. They say they want a lot done, but they'll send us a preliminary budget that's really terrifying and unrealistic.
Terrifyingly low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unrealistic.
Yeah. Unrealistic.
And we come into that saying, hey, we need to educate them about the costs involved, and they may just not know, right? They may be throwing a number out thinking that sounds good, and they may have more flexibility in their budget. They just don't know what things cost. So we always go into it assuming that. And we consider it our job at the first estimate to help educate as much as we possibly can. So again, we're not wasting their time and they're not wasting, you know, ours in any way. So we sit with them, and if they're just hard set on an unrealistic budget, we will kindly advise them on what they should probably expect all in, either with the designer and with the construction costs. And if it's just not realistic, we encourage them, you know, to keep looking. Either they usually come back because they found that in their research this was true. And they either are committed to expanding the budget or not, or they don't. So that's part of it. And then for the emotional side of remodeling, that's another discussion we have really early in the game, right? First interview, we talk a lot about, or we try to talk a lot about the process of remodeling and how stressful it is. We try to advise them on considering certain things they should do when they're renovating to help alleviate their stress, and also to not be on the job site all the time, because that's not healthy for a homeowner to be in there all the time. They're not understanding what they're seeing, and it causes undue stress. It causes us undue stress as well. So we try to advise that. We always joke that we are 50% designer, 50% marriage counselor. So we try.
It's not a joke.
It's not a joke. That's a real thing. That's a real thing. So we try to have that conversation really early on. Like, you guys, you need to understand, take the stress level you think you will experience in this remodel and elevate it, because you're not aware, you know?
And this is so fun to hear this conversation, because we're always talking about begin with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Really know who you are and be ready to say no. And if you say no to those people, but yet you begin with the end in mind, if you set up the conversations emotionally, proper budgets, those things, and if you say no, you don't, and if they don't come back to you, you don't want to do business with them.
Exactly.
But if they come back to you, then that means you've done a good job painting the picture. So that's, folks, if you're listening to this, that's the key to growing your business right there.
And I do want to say on that note to growing the business, sometimes the no answer isn't always about budget. Right? It's about an actual connection. So you'll notice one thing I'm really proud of with my company, we're super alternative, you know, like you've got tattoos and piercings and just we're different. You know, we're not super, I don't think we're the image of what you'd think a traditional interior designer looks like necessarily. Not that I'm, trying to put anybody in a box. Right. But if we go to a meeting with a client, they're obviously uncomfortable with us just as people. You know, this is a relationship that's going to last for months.
Right.
We're going to be with each other for a long time. You have to consider it like dating. It's kind of like you got to swipe left if they're being weird.
Yep.
You got to move on.
It's so true.
You got to move on.
And when you're new in business, if you're a new contractor, you want to take everything. Cause
you do, and we did. We did.
And we all learn. You learn by doing. Yeah. We're trying to help you say no.
Yeah, you have to. Earlier on, you'll save money.
It really is like going into the bigger the project, the bigger the marriage that you're getting into.
Absolutely.
Well, and the key thing is, like any relationship, the biggest mistake we all make as humans is we don't listen to our gut. And once you've gone through the process of starting the business and you kind of, and you've done all this, so you understand that's all out and put together. So the next thing is whether there's a feeling that just isn't there and comfort. And like you say, it's going to be a long process on both sides. And the last thing you need is to be working on a project with somebody that you want to fire them later. And we've seen it. I mean, we've lived it. We've had our clients that have gone through that where at the end, you know, not only do they just write off money that, you know, they're arguing over, but it keeps them from doing all those other projects. And so it's just a nightmare.
You hit it on the head with the money part. I mean, we did that over and over again in the beginning. If there was a disagreement about the way something shook out or there was never a good relationship to begin with, we paid, you know, we'd pay clients and say, hey, let's just not do this. Sorry, you're unhappy for whatever reason, even if we really shouldn't have been losing that money. You will do it as a young business. You will do that. And that can be avoided a lot of times by just dodging those bad relationships, not just with clients, but with partners in the industry too. That's very important. Cut them.
Yeah, I think if you don't have that trust, and again, it goes back to that whole idea of relationship. If you get the sense that you've got a control freak on the other end that wants to do everything themselves when they really don't know the process, oh boy, run for the hills.
Right. Exactly. Right? Absolutely. 100%.
All right. I called myself out. I said I have to be the homeowner. So now I'm going to be the crusty homeowner. Mm. And we're in the interview process. You're sitting at my you typically do them in their houses.
Always.
So you're at my house. And I'm saying, so why should I hire you versus the other company to do this design? Or why can't I just do this myself?
Oh, great question, crusty homeowner. I love that question. So two things to speak to you not doing it yourself. You will avoid costly errors by hiring a professional. This is the number one reason we encourage you to hire a professional. You may think that you're comfortable doing it, but 9 times out of 10, homeowners make a critical mistake. They don't realize it until late in the game. You're going to pay to have it redone. So it's something to consider to hire a professional so that you can foresee those before they become a problem. Avoid the cost, avoid the time, avoid the headache. It's a really big number one factor. Also, I think that our work just speaks for itself. We have a long list of referrals. I have over 114 projects I'd be happy to give you information on, send you contacts. They'd all be willing to talk about our work. We have only 5-star reviews. You know, you can house Yelp. If you go look at our reviews, you can see that clients actually tend to exceed the character limit on their reviews with us. I'm not sure why that keeps happening.
Can't
welcome you. Yeah, I know. They can't handle it. It's exciting. But, you know, seriously, long list of references. I think that that's my favorite way to recommend to a client just speaking to you is to say, hey, just go talk to our people, right? I think the work speaks for itself. I'm uncomfortable. I might sound really confident saying this, you know, here, but I'm actually a huge introvert and I struggle with face-to-face conversation if it's uncomfortable or awkward. I always have an answer, but for me, it's like, you know what? I can sit here and sell my business and my work all day, but the best thing you can do is go talk to our past clients because I am so confident in what they'll say that we have a long list of references and they all kind of say the same thing. And
awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's really important in any building process, but I think much more so in the remodel because you've got so many things, like you described earlier, you've got that, you know, the homeowner, their own relationship. You've got all the aspect of moving out, moving back, all the disruption. And then can you trust these people? You know, I mean, what is that process like? What better a way to find out than to talk to people that you've, you know, that have worked with you? So
yeah, absolutely. And our clients are, I mean, that's a huge shout out to our client base. They are so incredible about doing that for us. I imagine they must get sick of us sending constant, you know, asking for reviews and references, and they just continue to pull through and are happy to do it. It's amazing. So we have a really phenomenal client base.
Well, that's another important point for those listening, and that is, you know, you can never ask for too many referrals and too many.
Never.
Yeah, it's so important because, you know, it might be just that right person that clicks with the potential client, and that does the job. You can never ask for too many. Don't be shy.
Absolutely.
But I challenge people when people are saying, well, I can't get any reviews. Well, look yourself in the mirror, because reviews are earned. Relationships are earned. When your confidence, you know, speaks for itself, and it's coming through the microphone, I'm sure. But that's earned. Like, you Absolutely. Have to see the project through to the end. So now I'm back to crusty homeowner saying, so, well, how are you gonna keep track of all this, and how are you gonna work with my contractor?
Great question. So, assuming the way you phrase that, you have your own contractor, which is something we also do. If we come into a job and the client already has a contractor, happy to work with your contractor, happy to work with anyone. In fact, I find meeting a new contractor, if
Well, he's my brother-in-law. He, you know, he works at Home Depot, and he's just going to handle this on the side. That okay?
This is my worst nightmare.
That's a joke, right?
It's not unrealistic.
I mean, but then what would you say to them?
So I would without offending, I'd have to say, you know, I'd really like to meet him, and I would like to have a discussion about whether he feels comfortable with the scope of work after we develop the design, because there may or may not be things he's comfortable doing. Now, most of our clients, I don't know if this is the case in crusty client land over here, but, you know, want a permit. And if they're not licensed, we just can't, right? So that starts to, like, stop it in its tracks. If brother...
I don't want a permit.
That's a bad idea.
But you'd fire that client,
you know,
right?
Yeah, so... You know, I think that when – this is an interesting conversation too. A lot of clients and contractors have dialogues about whether or not to permit, and we let the contractor advise them on that, because that's going to ultimately affect the contractor. But we always say, like, hey, if you're doing more than X, Y, and Z, like, you need to be safe about this. Plus, you're going to incur additional cost and headache by going this route. But yes, I think that this client that you're portraying right now was something we never run into, because I would be able to sense this insecurity and this tone long before we got to the house. I really mean it when I say that it goes back to that relationship. But if the client isn't, we have a contractor that says this a lot too, one of our best that we've worked with since the beginning, says, if this person is not excited for me to do their job, then how can I get excited to do their job, right? Like, if you are fighting me, I mean, there's a difference between not being sure and asking good questions, because we really want them to ask questions. Right. I am happy to answer questions, and we want them to be well-informed, right? We want them to understand the process and be comfortable. But if they're resisting and they're already fighting us and they're nickeling and diming and they're fighting the process, it's never going to work, because it's only going to get more complicated.
And I appreciate you saying that. And I put you on the spot, but I can tell your confidence, and you've been through this. And it's good for people to hear how to position this and how to say no, because that's one of the hardest things for us all to do. And two things we don't have enough of, and that's time and money.
Absolutely.
And the more I go through life, time is our most valuable resource. And you got to, who you're in front of and who you're spending time with, you better like them and have a relationship and have fun, or your life's too short to run out of time.
I think that's especially true with this, because our projects last for, like we said, a long time, right? So if you're miserable, you're just going to start resenting your work. And at the end of the day, as an entrepreneur, that's our biggest thing, right? Don't burn out. Don't resent what you're doing. So yeah, and I think a piece of advice for people who might be uncomfortable saying no to a client's face right then and there, because that's uncomfortable, is to just follow up. You know, have a nice meeting. Keep it professional. Don't leave them with a bad taste in their mouth about you or your business. But maybe, you know, after you meet, give it a day or something. Come back. Send them a nice professional email so it's in writing. I'm big on that. Everything has to be in writing always. So send them a nice professional thing, says, you know, it was an absolute pleasure to meet you. I wish you the very best with your project. I think it's going to be phenomenal, and you will find someone who I'm happy to make some recommendations, point some people your way. I just don't think that we're the best fit for your job. I think ultimately you might spend more than you're comfortable with. We're kind of crossing a line that maybe we're not comfortable with professionally. Maybe tell them how to resolve that problem. But if we just didn't click, we're just very honest and professional. We wish them the best. We give them some recommendations so they don't feel like they just got screwed.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of recommendations, who's some top contractors in your market here in Denver, Colorado that you work with?
So that's a great question. We, up until this year, have worked with very, very small companies. Really have been working with small scopes, so we've never gotten into like big construction. The first one we ever started with, his name is Ian Burks, and it's Burks Works Handyman and Construction. He started as a handyman and then evolved into larger scopes. And Ian is actually one of my best friends from high school. Can you believe that? We went to high school together and then reunited after many years. Cool. Yeah, so he grew up. His mom is a genius, like property flipper. Nice. Did repairs on... Yeah, she's a badass. Sorry, I'm terrible.
that's a good but book, she,
yeah,
too, by
right?
The way.
It is, yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So she... kind of drug him around as a child, being like, you're doing this.
That's smart.
Right? So he learned how to do very basic construction things as a young child and then got really amazing at it. And in high school, we took an AutoCAD class together. And he always said, I'm going to start my own construction business. And I was like, I'm going to be a designer. And we all thought, like, sure. And then started. He was my first contractor. He built some of my first projects.
That's awesome.
And
that's great.
He still is. He's a go-to. He's, you know, one-man show with a few. You know, he's an electrician and a plumber. And then it's just him. So he's small scope. You know, tighter budgets, but he makes these wonderful relationships with clients. We absolutely love him. Dovetail Joint Construction is a good one. He's been with us. That's Dan Duffy. He's been with us for a long time. He was one of my first resources when I started, and he actually helped me get my feet on the ground in terms of being able to, like, come into a job and really sell it like I knew what I was doing, and he came through and made me look like I knew what I was doing. So that was great. Okay, we've got Altitude Remodeling and Construction. That's run by Armando Delgado. He is a phenomenal human being and a great business owner and just a really good guy. Yeah, and then now we've started partnering. I don't know if you guys have heard about, we just recently met up with Global Construction, and we've been talking to Denver Design Builds on a few projects. So those are obviously much bigger companies.
Yeah.
Really big. And so price tag and team size all go up, but we're now getting much higher dollar projects. So this seems like a good move for sure.
Well, I would, Denver Design Build may have been kind of through the Art of Construction and Adam. So it's all about connecting that. And I passionately love hearing you say those names because you genuinely have a great relationship with those people.
Absolutely.
And that's
They're
why we
family.
Asked that question. Mm-hmm. So wherever you're at in the world listening to this as the Art of Construction, find your Burks Works, your Dovetail Joint Construction, Altitude Remodeling, Global Construction, because these guys, mm-hmm. you learn by doing. And this, you learned a lot about school from these guys, not theory,
Absolutely.
But real world, that you also took those theories and put that all together. Back to the story you talked about, you working for others. Always be learning. That's the key. As I was at Berkshire Hathaway at the summit this year, and Warren Buffett sitting up there, and he's like, we learn every day. That's how we get better. Every day we're learning, and they're still like, billions of dollars, it's all about learning the next thing. And you talked about, I did the same thing working for other people before I started my company. Is always like, man, they are really good at that. But boy, if they were to do that better, relationships
Absolutely.
Is what your whole thing, you've built your premise. But you also learned contracts, you know, the previous show on the AIA contracts. Those are not the shows that I get on juiced and fun, you know, about, but you better understand that.
Yes.
So go back and listen to the show on the AIA contract documents and all those different tools that we put together for you.
Well, and the key thing is the description of relationships is kind of a buzz phrase, right? But the key is you need to not only establish relationship, you need to maintain it. And part of that maintenance is to deliver on what your promises are. It's not just like a slap on the back, hey, we like each other, but the project's going to run off the rails and everything's going to be okay. That doesn't work either.
Never.
It's one of those things where it's a constantly evolving process that you need to watch, maintain, and keep your eyeballs on.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why you brought Ian with Burke Works came
yes.
to, because he makes you look good. And
He does. That is such a good point. I think you're absolutely right. I think the contractors that we're loyal to love us because they enjoy building our designs genuinely. They appreciate design and they look at it and they're like, oh, this is going to be fun, right? We love to see that. That's so exciting. But in return, you know, they do phenomenal work and our clients are happy. And so it's such a great relationship because if the construction goes poorly, that reflects on us. We've made this recommendation, which is a huge liability we take on when we come in and say, hey, we have a recommendation for you, right? We're putting these people in their house. So that's why we are equally loyal, and you're totally right about maintaining the relationship, and being reliable is so key. I mean, it's like the biggest, you're not reliable, you're
Yeah, I have to share a little story on that. When I was a home builder, we were doing a lot of, we did some custom and some commercial work, but we did a lot of production home building. And one of the biggest frustrations I always had was we build this home and then you have all these subcontractors and you're working at typically the owner level in terms of relationships. So then, you know, homeowner moves in and you have to have service, right? Well, if the plumber needs to fix something, my guys aren't going in to do it. The plumber's going in to do it. And that's where things fell off the tracks. And so the way we resolved that finally was because what would happen is you'd have the plumber go in there and he'd start talking some nonsense about something or other. And the homeowner all of a sudden be calling us with some concerns. And the reality was they were just venting their own frustration. Well, it's like, not on my dime. Right. So I'd call the owner of the company and go, that person's no longer allowed on our job site ever. So move on to the next guy. And that's the way we resolve that is because we're not hiring those people, but I'm hiring his owner. Absolutely. And if they don't do the job they're supposed to do, I had to get in the middle of that to preserve that relationship because who's the homeowner going to call?
Oh, they're absolutely. Going to call you. You know what? That's hilarious. We have a affectionately coined a term of something I do. It's called the blacklist.
No, you need
them.
So
you don't want to be on Crystal's blacklist. Yeah. I think that we've made so many great relationships, you're so right, that you start to realize as an entrepreneur over time, you know, you stay modest and you stay humble and you are thankful to all the people who have pulled you through. And then you hit a point where you're like, wow, I really actually have some pull in this industry right now. And you're right. You know, if somebody doesn't do their job or somebody hurts a client or loses me money, I will tend
but,
to
but
that.
Stay humble. This industry, it's too small. I always, one of my first mentors in this industry was like, Devin, do whatever you can to never burn a bridge.
Absolutely.
And just if you know.
Even if you want to blow it up, don't.
If you want to blow it up, walk away and think through it.
Yeah. No, that's so true. You know, I say we just celebrated the company's fourth birthday, and thank you so much. And one of my big things that I shared, you know, I did like a big post about it, and I said, you know, I read this amazing article just a couple months ago, and it was just really hitting home, you know, the number one priority in your life as an entrepreneur should be to be good to your people. And that's always my top priority, you know, take care of my team, but also my clients and our contractors. You know, we love them as family. We take care of them. It's that mutual respect that makes people want to pull for you, right? I mean, if you're a jerk and you don't respect your work family, they're not going to want to pull for you. I don't understand why people think that's a good direction to take. You know, you're so right. Being genuine and friendly makes people want to do right by you. It produces better results in the end. You know, it produces a solid team. It's better all the way around.
So many lessons on this thing, and I'd like to sit and role play with you all day long because my trust advisors in this industry could learn so much about how you get into the mind of Krusty and say no or get them to see the light.
Yeah, absolutely.
And folks, that's what it's all about. And when some of the crustiest people I've ever met end up being some of our best customers
because
a lot of those old school people or whatever you want to call it, they put up a front.
They're just nervous.
And if they're scared of us young professionals, they put up a front. But you got to break that down, and then you build that relationship. So we keep these shows under an hour. Good job. It's
Thanks.
So fun talking
Thanks
with you. The one thing we always say as a learning organization. For the global audience listening to The Art of Construction, if there's that one thing that we've all pulled together, what's the one thing you want to leave them with to help them grow their business?
What you said, keep learning. Don't ever stop learning. If that means you have to teach to stay relevant and you have to teach to learn more, then do it. But don't stop. That's absolutely critical.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good job, Crystal.
Thank
we
you.
Wish you the best with your business.
Appreciate it.
Sales 101.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is one of the common denominators through a lot of the conversations on Art of Construction, that is that practical, real-life, hands-on experience. I think, obviously, she's got that amazing creative ability and a lot of ideas, but I think the thing that kind of allowed her to catapult all of that talent into an amazing business is the experience that she got working for the contractor back in Philadelphia. I mean, just think about it. She got to see firsthand how everything's put together so that then when the design ideas are coming out, she's able to communicate that in a way, you know, to her ultimate customers and then also interact and deal with the contractors on the basis of absolute knowledge.
People listening, we can all be a bit crusty at times. I'm calling myself out too. And sometimes you put up that wall. Why would you do that? Put up that wall when you have people like Crystal and her team take the time to work on your business and meet people like that. And it's so much fun, and you all learn so much together, because I couldn't agree more with her takeaway is always be learning. Doing business with someone like that, you're going to learn something hanging out with
them. Well, and here's a little subtle comment, or a couple of comments that she wove together that maybe you hear. It is, okay, she mentioned her age, so I'm going to repeat it. It's not, she said she's going to be 30, or was just 30, right. Turned 30. She mentioned that when she was in school a few years ago that they didn't teach some of the 3D rendering aspects, and she had to teach herself. So, you know, one of the things in the development, construction, home building business is everybody thinks they've been there, done that, and it's all the same stuff. Well, not exactly. So that whole idea of never stop learning, more impactful. Here you've got somebody that is a millennial in the age group, and she's still teaching her things that she couldn't learn in school just a few years ago. And look what it's doing to her business. So you really don't always know everything.
And I'm going to leave you with this. It's more important than ever. They do renderings on every project. They're going to save your bacon so much. They can see the colors, concepts, the vision of what you're going to create before you go build it. And then they say they don't like it. As Frank Lloyd Wright said, it's a lot cheaper to grab the eraser on the job site.
Yeah, and we see that all the time where, you know, the amendments and the changes are not on paper. They're in 2x6 studs and sheetrock and so forth. It would be a lot cheaper to get it all done on paper first.
Well, Crystal, thanks for letting us put you on the spot. You absolutely crushed it. And I'm so honored to have you and your team as part of the Art of Construction tribe. Keep crushing it. Art of Construction's behind you all the way.
Awesome.